Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th day of December. Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. Mm-hmm. Anno Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to change, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. Are we on with audio?
I think the audio is working.
It's just last second.
I forgot a crucial piece of equipment today. In fact, you have your phone?
I do.
Handy? Can you unlock it? Let me log into YouTube and see if the audio is working there.
Yes, of course. There you go.
Thank you.
Well, I don't do YouTube on my phone.
I'll go in the web browser.
Yeah, it'll have to be through the web browser. In the meantime, while Steve does that, I will...
It's a Google phone. It has the YouTube app pre-installed.
Oh, right. Of course it does. Yeah. Just because I don't use it doesn't mean it isn't there. Google undoubtedly dominates the desktop browser market, while Microsoft Edge has...
Oh, you don't have a headphone jack either. So Google had the same courage Apple did years ago?
Why am I hearing, is that, oh, I'm hearing it because it's coming through my earphones, my hearing aids.
Oh, so you're hearing it from your phone, and,
yes.
All right, so it is working then.
Yes.
I will stop that then.
So. Yes, please stop that because it's making me crazy. Google undoubtedly dominates the desktop browser market, while Microsoft Edge has shown notable growth in recent times. However, Firefox continues to face challenges in attracting new users. In an effort to turn the tide, Mozilla is testing a fresh approach that could persuade more people to switch their default browser on Windows during the installation of the browser. There is a new setup screen in the latest Firefox beta release that helps you customize your browser right after installing it. It highlights that Firefox is backed by a nonprofit and works to protect your privacy by stopping companies from secretly tracking you online. The screen gives you three options: pinning Firefox to your taskbar, setting it as your default browser, and importing data from another browser. All of these options were enabled by default, an aggressive approach by Mozilla, who has previously criticized Microsoft for utilizing pre-selected options. This change is tied to another experiment aimed to streamline the onboarding process for users downloading Firefox through special marketing campaigns. If a user chooses to install Firefox from a campaign that advertises it as the default browser, Firefox will now handle the setup process automatically, removing the need for manual configuration. The feature works by embedding a unique identifier called an attribution campaign ID into the lightweight stub installer that you install from Mozilla's website. When users run Firefox for the first time, the browser detects this identifier if the identifier matches the campaign to set Firefox as the default browser. Firefox initiates a background task to set itself as the default on the user system. This feature is currently being tested in Firefox's nightly and beta releases to iron out any issues before it becomes widely available in Firefox 135. And when it does, we're going to have a whole lot of people suddenly confused by what's going on, or maybe not, depending on how observant they are. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is what is your default browser? And your choices, in alphabetical order, the most common browsers around: Brave, Chrome, Firefox, Lynx, Safari, Vivaldi, Other, and Browser. What is Browser? So far, we have 33 votes.
Mm.
This is an easy one. People can do this. And so far, contrary to national, the way the national voting goes, here at Soundbites, the Firefox is the number one with about half the votes, and followed by Chrome and then Browser, What is browser? Two people use Safari. Two people use other. I'd like to know what that is. How interesting.
Maybe we should tell them, though, the poll's broken so we get more votes.
Exactly. Well, this one's easy. It's not like you have to think. What is your default browser? I should have had a choice of I don't know. I realize that. But for those of you who don't know, just pick browser. What is browser? But that's our poll of the week. And, of course, you can also give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
I use the Google.
Exactly. I don't know. It came with Microsoft. Okay. It's Edge. But yeah, there's
Edge.
Just
Edge isn't a choice.
Isn't Edge isn't a choice?
You forgot Edge.
And DuckDuckGo.
That's probably what the other is. Yeah. Well, that's I only get so many choices.
Edge is Chromium based now, so it is Chrome.
It is Chrome. They're all Chrome except for Firefox.
And Safari.
Mm-hmm. So far. So far we have 39 votes, so please vote in the poll. I did, I forgot Edge. Jeez and crackers. Okay, that's on me.
No, that's a wise choice.
There's something Freudian there.
Yeah, it's like, that's okay. You can forget that one.
Yeah. But at any rate, that's our poll of the week. And, of course, like I said, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. This is an important thing these days because the browser is how we interact with 95% of our computers. Most of us spend all day in the browser. We even do email in the browser. We do everything in the browser. That's why Chromebooks are so popular. They're inexpensive, and pretty much what they do is the browser. And that's all most people need.
Yep.
You can do your word processing and spreadsheeting and all the othering in your browser. You don't need anything else. Now, Chromebook has other things. There are apps, and you can run your Android apps in it, and everything else has its own set of apps, and you can run Linux as a subsystem on that, and run pretty much every Linux program there is. On my Chromebook, I run, for example, I run Thunderbird. On my Chromebook, I can do that.
Yep.
You'll want more than 2 gig. To do that, of course, you want a minimum of 4 gig, and more would even be better. But you can do that, and that's one of the reasons that Chromebooks are selling as well as they are, is that 90% of what most people do, they can do in the browser. And you don't need more. Why buy more? And that's the way that goes. All right, to the phones. Our first caller today is Walter from Greece, New York. What's up, Walter?
Good day to everybody there. My wife and I, my wife's also here, and she has a separate question from what I have. I think she's got an easier question than I do, and so I'll let her talk first. I'll let Carolyn talk to you first.
Okay.
Hello. I have a Samsung tablet that's about 5 years old, and I just purchased a new Samsung tablet, and I've been reading about the process to set it up, and it says that I can copy from a backup of my old tablet, and I've also been reading about Samsung Smart Switch, so I'm not sure which I should do.
Have you had a lot of...
No, it basically doesn't matter. It's your choice. Yeah. If you have already been using a backup program to back up your tablet, then that would be the easiest to restore it to the new device.
Yeah, look it up.
If you don't already have a backup program, then the Samsung Smart Switch is probably easier.
Okay. I have been, it's been on auto backup to my Google Drive, but I was looking at that the other day, yesterday, I was looking at the backup, and it said there were 17 apps, and I thought, well, I got a lot more apps than that. So I ran a backup manually. And then it said I had 35 apps, which is
there you go
closer to what I have. I have about 50.
It may not be counting the apps that come with the tablet.
Yeah, some are default ones that just are in the system automatically.
Okay. Now, why would it be different, that the automatic backup different than the one I ran myself?
Well, it shouldn't be, theoretically, but it depends on what settings you've used.
Plus, if she's backing up the ones that are automatically installed, that would change the count, too.
Well, but the point is, if you haven't used those,
yep,
it may be that the automatic backup is only backing up what you've used.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense.
So you don't have any data in the others. There's no point in backing them up. When you do a manual backup, you basically said, everything, I don't care.
Yep. Okay.
Because a lot of them come with bloatware that you don't use.
Okay. All right. Now, if I do this, copy from the backup of my old tablet, say it copies my browser, will it also bring in all my bookmarks and all that stuff?
That is the theory, absolutely.
Okay.
Now, right. And Samsung Smart Switch, say that three times fast,
mm-hmm,
it does essentially the same thing, and it's designed specifically to do that stuff. So
okay,
it just, you might want to take a look at it. You might not want decide not to use it, but you should definitely take a look at it, and that's at Samsung's website.
Okay.
You just do a search for Samsung Smart Switch,
and especially
you'll get a link.
The other thing, too, though, is if she's copying all those old apps versus, you know, the ones that are the new ones on the current tablet, they might be totally different versions, and she might be copying old apps onto a new tablet.
Well, when you use Smart Switch, for example, it doesn't copy the apps, it copies
the
data. It installs the apps and copies the data.
And theoretically, it should install the latest version from
the
store rather than copying your old version.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, if I copy from the backup of my old tablet, will that do the same thing?
It sounds like the backup from your tablet will do the data of the apps that you've already used,
mm-hmm,
and not the other ones. But theoretically, it should work just fine.
Okay. Okay, should I do a manual backup first and then do the setup?
Always do a manual backup before you do anything like that.
Okay, All right, I think I got it. Now, if I do decide to use Smart Switch, it can be wireless or with a cable. What would you recommend?
Cable.
Cable's faster, but if you don't have a whole lot of data on it, wireless is just fine.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. I think my husband has a question for you.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen, for helping her.
Sure.
My question is what to do, what would be the best thing to do. What I mean is that I've been using old SATA disks, hard drives, for backups, you know, storing backups, using the USB 2 adapter kits. One's in a hard case, the other's a freestanding model. I think the one in the hard case has gone bad because when I tried to do a backup, the device stopped and then restarted, and then it gave me a whole brand new directory, renaming the one that was there to a different name, and it came up with another directory. And so that, leaving that aside, I could not unmount or even eject the USB drive now.
Yeah.
Then I went, and just to make sure it was that device, I put in another one of my SATA drives, put it in, same thing, no longer can unmount.
Yeah, it sounds very much like the problem is the drive itself is dead.
Or what it can be, and I've seen this happen, especially in those little enclosures, the circuitry in those little cases can go amok. So if you could take the hard drive out.
He did that.
Oh, I didn't hear it. I was answering
the phone. Yeah, you were answering the phone. He did put it in another enclosure and had the same issue.
And then, yeah, that's a hard drive.
Okay. You may have luck by trying to reformat it.
Go ahead.
And there's also a program from GRC called Init Disk, INIT for Initialized Disk, that can resurrect old disks. But I don't know if I would trust that disk anymore.
Yeah.
For anything really important if it's had problems already. Although every disk has problems and they map out bad sectors and bring in good sectors all the time.
Yep. As with any relationship, never get back when your ex when they go bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I use MX Linux, and so therefore I've been going on the command line trying to see if I could unmount it, and nothing happens at all. I did try one of them. I put and used the GNOME disk utility on it to erase it.
Right.
And it didn't do anything.
Yeah, that's a bad drive. That's clearly a bad drive. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then it may have also done, it seems I did that on another one, and it seems like I failed both drives then, because I was going to ask if I could try shred or wipe or DD to resurrect it.
You certainly could try any of those, particularly yeah. DD.
Okay.
Particularly DD, and it couldn't hurt to try it.
Yeah, it won't hurt.
But don't get excited.
Yeah.
Okay, so eventually that USB adapter has ruined two hard drives on me.
Yes.
Okay, very good. I didn't want to hear that. Oh, by the way, we are members, and we hope everybody else will be throwing some money your way over the holidays.
Thank you. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Walter.
Thank you.
And Mrs. Walter. Thank you. Thank you both. Okay, why am I hearing... Oh, that must have been him, because now it's stopped. Okay. I was hearing an echo. And I guess it must have been
maybe
his phone.
Make sure your stream yard is muted.
My whole thing is muted.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We had a question in the YouTube chat. Dave, wondering about your gloves. Are they for arthritis or are you cold? Or both?
No, they are for arthritis. I have found that these copper fit gloves are fantastic. Because where I work, I'm right near the front door, and especially on my left hand here, the right one too, swelled up this past week with all the cold and everything else. So I got the actual copper fit gloves, and they have been fantastic. I mean, I still have the arthritis, but it doesn't hurt as bad.
They were suggesting Voltaren cream.
I use that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you get the cream out of Voltron, though?
Exactly. We call it Voltron enough.
Very carefully.
But, yeah, the Voltaren cream, diclofenac something is the generic name, works great for pain, but it doesn't help keep your hands warm or cut down on the swelling, and that's what those will do.
And what I like about these, too, I mean, for the most part, it keeps the joints. The key part is that it keeps the joints, you know, warm, and it still has the fingertips because I'm handling money and receipts and all that other type of stuff, and they're great for that.
And it helps with pickpocketing.
Yeah.
Yeah, understood.
Yeah, it's difalconate sulfate.
Sulfate, that was
so
it.
You got to watch your sodium intake now.
Right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hey, Nick. The poll is interesting because I can't make multiple choices because I use Firefox on my desktop, and I, of course, use Chrome on my Chromebook.
Yep. But, yeah, well, the big thing is, yes, you only get one choice, and you have to make a decision, Andy. It's
life's decisions.
It's the way the world works.
Yeah, well, I'll finger it out someplace. But when last we talked, we were discussing the Samsung requirement to go to Google Messages.
Oh, right.
And I found out that you go into the Google Messages symbol, which is the white one with the little blue text bubble on it.
Well, let me back up so everybody else knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, catch him up to speed.
Andy has a Samsung phone, and he's gotten a message that says Samsung is no longer supporting their own messaging app. They are transitioning everybody to Google's messaging app. Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. So when I went in and I hit the Google message symbol, first I went into my Samsung and made sure I knew what was there and got rid of stuff that I was keeping that I didn't want to keep. Then I went to the Samsung one, I hit it and said, make this your default app. Click the button. Up it comes. Everything that I'd just seen in the Samsung messaging was there in order. Nothing was lost. Very painless.
Nice. Very nice.
I tried to go back to the Samsung one and said, you now have to make this the default one to get into it, which I didn't do. But they basically move it over and lock it out for you.
Terrific. That sounds great.
All I had to do was get rid of the Samsung icon from my home screen and put the Google one in there,
yep.
Which is not hard. and it just rolls right along. I checked my wife's phone, and she has a newer model of the she's got the S24, and apparently it came that way because it's already set up for Google Messages.
Yeah, nice. One of the things that I like also about Google Messages is you can use Messages for web. So once you're set up with Google Messages, and this is for everybody who uses Google Messages, Google's messaging app to send messages on their phones, you can go to messages.google.com and sign in with your regular Google information. And what happens is you can then get and see and use all of your messaging stuff right at your browser. So if you're sitting at your desktop or your laptop or whatever, and a message comes in on your phone, you can see it and answer it right there. You don't have to get your phone out. It's pretty nice, actually.
My camera keeps rotating, and I don't know why.
Oh, I thought you were pouring the...
Well, I have to rotate the iPad so the camera rotates back.
But that's another thing that I like very much about Google Messages. But yeah, and Google, of course, uses RCS. I am hearing an echo from somewhere.
I'm hearing a hiss.
I'm getting a background hiss is all.
Is the what you call it up? The what do you call it?
That makes the hiss more.
Yeah.
We got to do.
All right. Anyway, the point is
we want to hear the caller too, not the hiss.
We want to hear the caller now.
Yeah, I'm not getting any hiss on my end.
Oh, so. Well, good. We'll see if it ends up having the It sounds more like it's a repeat of what I'm saying, which is why I asked if it was the monitor that was
No, we're not.
So, I don't know what that is, but whatever it is, I don't like it.
Sorry.
So the point is that yes, the other good thing about Google messages is that it does RCS, and if you are talking to another Google message person, it is end-to-end encrypted, which is a good thing.
Well, the nice part is you just make the one click and say make it the default. And it handles everything in the background, so you don't have to be worried about whether you're going to lose anything or how hard is it going to be or what do I have to learn. You don't have to learn anything. Just click and say, do it.
Yep.
And it's done. Okay?
Yep.
So, we'll keep listening. Have a good week.
All right. Thanks. You too.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Google has done a pretty good job with all of their apps. And Google Messages works very well. I'm pretty impressed with it. I particularly, like I said, I very much like Google Messages on the web. In particular, my cousins. There were 10 kids, which for the N-Rights is like Tuesday, but there were 10 kids, and now it's all of them, all of their spouses, all of their children, all in this chat. Every day I get dozens of messages at a time all day long, which is great. I mean, I love having reconnected with them. Don't get me wrong. But having to stop what I'm doing and look at my phone,
Get chaotic.
I can just leave it open as a tab on my desktop, and I can just go over and look. It's much easier.
What? Have more than one tab?
Stop.
You're getting...
I know it's hard.
You're getting up there. We just got to keep you going.
Right. One of the things we were talking about is over the Ask Nick chat on Wednesday. Ask Nick every... Okay. Cut me right off. Go ahead. I'm used to you, mister. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We'll see you in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
I got to remind folks, good time to do it. We'll do it again later on. But remind folks, we have officially set December 21st. For our Rumball show, and for the folks that haven't tuned in for that, definitely you want to mark it on your calendars, because we tend to have a good time with that, and take calls, and even folks that don't have questions, just to call in, and wish everybody a happy holiday. It's great. And the other big thing, too, is we can't stress it enough. That as of this week, especially after Black Friday and Cyber Monday, the scammers are out there. I've already had a few calls on my phone trying to sit there and say that this particular card or that particular card has suspicious activities, and I'm supposed to call this number. And it's like, yeah, no. If I've got a problem with any of my cards, definitely you want to pick up the phone and call the bank. You can still do that with your phone. If in doubt, hang up with them and call your bank officially. If you don't know the number, there's always a number on the back of the card that you can look up and talk to a live person. So they're going to be out there, and they're going to be out there in full force, folks. I mean, nothing we can do about it. It's just part of it. It's called the World Wide Web. And if you get caught in a scam that's outside of the U.S., good luck in getting your money back.
Yeah, exactly.
Because once it's gone, it's gone.
Before we get back to the phones, I'm going to tell people, speaking of tabs, if you are looking at a Chrome browser, on the far upper left, just to the left of your first tab, there's a little carrot, a little down arrow in a circular tab. And if you click on that, you can see a list of all of your open tabs, and you can even search through them. So for someone like Dave, who has 800,000 or 900,000 tabs open, you can search through them easily and quickly and find the one that you wanted. So I thought that might be an interesting thing for people to know. And in the meantime, while you go look at that and marvel at it, because it's been there all along and you've never seen it, we will talk to Bill from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hello, guys. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
Okay, so you were talking about Google Messages, and I have a Samsung phone. So I shifted over to Google Messages. And I don't have any favorites. I can't figure out how to load favorites. I went online, I tried three things, and they didn't work. I want to be able to open up messages and, just have 1, 2, 3, 5 people that I normally call right there. But instead, I've got the whole list of people, and I got to go down the list. Is there a way to set favorites to show up?
Yes.
Tap and hold on the person and make them, Apple calls it VIP, maybe not favorite.
Right. Well, I'm just looking right now, and you should be able to open, if you open up a particular
contact,
right, a particular person. Well, okay, so there's two ways to do it. One is in messages itself. Open up a particular set of messages with a person like your wife or your child or whatever, and then under on the three-button menu at the top, you can select starred. And they will be made more prevalent.
So it's not favorite, it's not VIP, it's star.
Right.
Okay, that worked. I just got my daughter on when I open it up, I see daughter. What is Gemini? I don't know if I need it. If I don't need it, can I get rid of it?
Yes and no. I don't know that you can get rid of it. Gemini is Google's AI. You know, everybody's got to have an AI now. It's not enough just to have a good phone with good stuff on it. You've got to have AI. God forbid you don't have AI. So Gemini is Google's version of AI, and you can ask it questions, and it'll talk to you. And if you get the right version, you can, I think you have to pay to get images and, you know, have it create pictures and movies for you. But, instead of typing into a search bar, how do I find, you know, X, you can ask Gemini to find X for you. And it eventually is going to replace all of the other assistants and become your number one main search Google assistant.
Google has also started adding that into the Google web search. You get an AI summary. What's kind of interesting, we joke that it's not really artificial intelligence. They picked the wrong name for it. It's a clever regurgitator.
Yes.
So you use say Google to do a search, you get a bunch of websites that relate to your search results. With the AI helpers, Microsoft Copilot, Apple AI, so we're trying to make Siri smarter, right. And then Google Gemini, it goes and does those searches, basically, and then gives you a summary paragraph about your search results instead of links to your search results.
And you keep setting
the links
phone
are
off.
There.
Yeah, the links are still there. Because,
underneath the summary.
Because a lot of times the summary's wrong.
Yeah, Steve set off just about every assistant
Google
with
phone.
That
yeah.
sentence.
Did I? Sorry.
Yeah, mine just went off.
Yeah.
Did I? Yeah.
So
a lot of the devices have shortened the trigger word. It used to be two words.
Right.
Yep.
Some trigger word and then the assistant name. And most of them have now shortened themselves to just the assistant name.
Right.
To trigger more frequently.
Right. So we here on the show, thanks to Dennis Worster, we now call Amazon's assistant Alaska.
Yeah.
We need to find names for all the others as well.
Yeah, there's Shlomo for Apple.
Oh, Shlomo.
Shlomo.
I like it.
And I got it from Andy and Otko had a few of those too.
But the idea is it's basically an AI assistant. So instead of doing your own searching, Gemini will search for you.
Okay, thank you for the information. I am able to create a favorites list now. Thank you.
There you go. Have fun.
There's an old meme that resurfaces every now and then. Someone complaining about all these new AIs. I don't need an AI to do a search for me, so I have more time to do cooking and cleaning. I want the AI to do the cooking and cleaning for me, so I can...
Exactly. They're solving the wrong end of the problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're solving the easy end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, yeah, who cares about the easy
Well, of course, then in science fiction literature, you know, you create the AI and intelligent robots, and eventually they revolt against you because they don't want to be the slave class either.
Right. All right. Well, you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 585-966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. I will read the news. The software situation with Android devices was pretty bad at one point, being one of the more crippling parts when it came to an aging device. The software upgrade situation, excuse me. Luckily, that has improved over the last few years, with some brands now promising several years of updates. Despite brands like Google and Samsung taking point here, that doesn't mean that all of their devices are under the same terms. Pixel 8 and Pixel 9 series users are good to go with 7 years of updates. But older Pixels, not so much, stuck with just 3 years of OS updates and 2 years of security patches. But Google is now making some advancements here, giving old devices new life with a full 5 years of updates going forward. We first saw hints of this becoming a possibility last month when the Pixel 6 unexpectedly got Android 16. Now Google has confirmed extended OS support for the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro, the Pixel 7 and 7 Pro, the Pixel Fold, as well as the A-series devices released during each of those generations. While these devices were initially guaranteed 3 years of OS upgrades, followed by 2 years of security patches, Google now promises a full 5 years of OS upgrades. The Pixel 6 and 6 Pro are going to be the oldest out of the bunch, released in 2021, and users can now expect support until 2026. 2022's Pixel 6a and the Pixel 7 series will now be supported through 2027. Both the Pixel Fold and Pixel 7a were released in 2023, which means they'll now see OS updates until 2028. While it's only an extension of 2 years, this means that every Tensor-powered phone Google has ever released will ultimately receive at least 5 years of OS updates. Starting with devices powered by 2023's Tensor G3, Google now promises a full 7 years of Android OS upgrades for all its Pixel models. For Pixel 6, 7, and Fold buyers who felt like they had poor timing after hearing that news, the extended guarantee jumping from 3 to 5 years should take some of the sting out of narrowly missing the cut. Next year will be quite an interesting year for Android with the start of a new release schedule. While typically Android releases come at the end of the year, the next release will see it arriving toward the beginning. While it's unclear exactly when Android 16 will arrive, many hints point to it coming before the end of Q2 in 2025. The developer preview of the operating system is already out. Which phone are you using? Give us a call, and there's a hint. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. A lot of Pixel users were pretty disgruntled to discover they were getting 2 and 3 years of upgrades when newer buyers were getting 5 and 7 years of upgrades. Yeah. Now everybody gets a minimum of 5. And the very newest machines get 7. And 5 years is a long time for a phone.
Yeah, because by then, I've found all the Pixel phones that I have had, by then, the battery isn't holding charges.
Right.
And that's the only reason for all of my Pixel phones, that has been the only reason that I have gotten rid of it. Because you could charge it up. Could be full charge, and by noon, I'm down to 10-15%. And I haven't even used it
right.
We sometimes say that, like dog and cat are 7 years per human year.
Yep.
You know, technology, your phones and computers are about 10, maybe 15 years
exactly.
per human year.
Mm-hmm.
So that five-year-old phone is way into middle age.
50 to 75, 80 years old. So,
yep.
Yeah. You have to understand that technology moves on. You know, God bless you. You bought a phone 4 years ago and you want to keep it because you're familiar with it and et cetera, et cetera. And I get that. Believe me, I absolutely get that. But the reality is the technology moves on. And companies, even companies the size of Apple and Google, cannot continue to support phones that are so old that it just takes a disproportionate amount of their resources to support. And that's why they move on from those devices and only support the newer devices.
It's not like a car that becomes a classic and people still make parts for a 50,
right.
70, 100-year-old car. I saw a neat video where a guy took a Model T Ford to the Ford dealer. You know, what's the oldest car you've ever worked on? Can you work on my 110-year-old car?
Yes.
They changed the oil.
There you go.
That's about the only thing that hasn't changed that much in 100 years.
All right. Let's head back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Niagara Falls.
What?
Remember Niagara Falls.
That's what I like to hear.
Slowly I turn.
Slowly I turn.
Step by step.
Inch by inch.
By inch. what I was going to say is a lot of these phones or tablets that will take these long-term upgrades,
yeah.
You will find after a while, as they take the upgrades, they will slow down.
Yeah,
right.
They're adding newer features that need the newer processor, which is eventually why an OS won't work on an old device, is because it requires more processor than the device has.
I had a Google tablet, a Nexus tablet, that had upgrades for so long, and I forgot what was before Lollipop. But when it took Lollipop,
right.
it turned into a brick.
Yep. And that's, and like we said, that's completely understandable.
Right.
Painful and annoying, but understandable.
Yeah, if you have a phone or a tablet that's got really high-end specs for what the Android system is using currently, and it's like really over-specced, you're going to do fine. But if it's just meeting the requirements within a couple of years, it's going to slow down quite a bit.
Right.
And they put those updates out almost every year.
Well, exactly. And
yeah.
They do put them out every year. And that's and that's the thing. As new features become available, rarely do those new features use old technology.
Right.
You know, they want more power. They want better processors. You know, with Apple, they a lot of the new stuff requires the M2 or M3 chip. And in Google, it's the G2 or G3 Tensor processor. And they don't work with the older models. They just don't work.
Yeah,
or it'd be
well,
so slow.
Work, but they work at a crawl.
Yep, right. So slow they're not worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. I always, when people ask me, well, what should I do if I want it to last? I said, well, buy something that's really what I would call overpowered.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you're going to get a lot more use out of it. Yes, you're going to spend a little more money, but you're not going to spend money in 2 or 3 years. You're going to spend it in 5 or 6 years.
Buy what you need in 5 years now, and so it'll last for 10 years.
Right.
Then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then you're at the mercy of the battery.
Yep.
Right. Well, exactly. That's the big
battle.
Thing.
But that one's a little easier to maintain if you charge it properly.
Right. If you never go below 20% and you never go above 80%,
exactly.
The battery will last much longer.
Right. Use that app that I told you. Remember using that app I told you about?
Right.
And that's a fantastic app.
And a lot of the phones nowadays actually do that automatically.
Yeah, my new Samsung does
right.
that. It asks you, how do you want to use your battery?
Right.
And it does a pretty good job.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent,
so,
Mark.
Yeah. Have a good one.
Thanks. You too. Yeah, have fun.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's...
Remember, wasn't there a lawsuit when Windows 10 was due out, a bunch of PCs were sold as being compatible with Windows 10, and they weren't really?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there was a class action lawsuit against them?
Well, we have that now with 11, and I think that's one of my news items for later. The TPM module, that is for later on. Windows 11... and certainly Windows 12 and above are going to require that you have a TPM module. And if you don't have one, well, too bad. It's time for Linux. Really, that's how that works. And there are phones like the Pine phone, and I think there's an Open phone. Is that what it's called? I don't remember. But that run open source operating systems that aren't compatible with Android or Apple. They run their own ecosystem, and they run it the way they want, and that's fine. If you want to buy one of those phones and tinker, you're certainly welcome to. But if you just want to buy a phone that makes phone calls, that does text and messaging and video, and by the way, also makes phone calls, and not have to play around with it, you're going to go with either the Apple or the Google ecosystems. And as time goes on, each of those platforms requires more and more power to do the things that people are mostly asking for. Everybody wants AI now because it makes life so much easier to simply ask it a question as opposed to have to, and you can refine the question and say, no, I didn't mean that, I meant this, whatever, and get around to a real answer rather than having to craft what they used to call Google foo. The ability to craft a query that actually got you the answer you were expecting.
Creative wording.
Right. And now the phone can talk you around to the right answer. And people want that. And unfortunately, that costs in terms of processing power. So in an old phone, you don't have that. You have to get a newer phone that will do that. The M2 chip really is all most people need these days right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now. But the M3 chip gives you much more speed, faster ability to do stuff. And the same thing with the Google G2 versus G3.
Yep, and the M4 is even faster. This is the first time Apple has, in their product announcements for the M4, compared to the M1.
Right.
Rather than to the older Intel models, which even the M1 was radically faster than the Intel models. Each successive chip is 15-20% faster than the last one.
Right.
Well, now we're four chips on, so the M4, it's 80-100% faster than the M1.
Right. I'm looking at a new computer, thanks mostly to Steve Organic. And I sent it over to Dave, who thinks it might be an acceptable piece of hardware.
Well, I told you, I was willing to put it together for you and then test it out for 6 to 9 months.
And I appreciate that.
I'm willing to make that sacrifice, you know, build it and then run it through a battery of tests for at least the next 6 to 9 months, because I wouldn't want to hand you over something.
Sure. Hmm? You got to make sure.
Well, that's the thing. I don't want to hand over something that's going to break on them.
No, and I appreciate that. But my point is that I, you know, ran all the specs, and the new machine, compared to the machine that I'm currently running, which is a high-end, it's an i7 processor and yada, 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 this would be 115% faster in the sort of stuff I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a high-end gamer. I'm not doing high-end CAD CAM stuff.
Right.
So for what I do, it would be 115% faster and would cost pretty much what my computer cost me seven years ago.
Yeah.
You know, the same amount of money, 115% faster.
But get it now in case prices go up.
Well, and that's why I'm looking right now.
Yeah.
If I can at least order the parts now and get them in, I can build in January.
We are seeing a lot of people who upgrade their computers are paying less than they did last time and getting a significantly faster machine.
Yep.
Although we have kind of seen that prices have kind of plateaued. Every new model comes out at the same price as last year's. So the prices aren't going down anymore, but the power keeps going way up.
Way up. So, I'm very excited about the thought of this. Very excited about the thought of having it together and making it work.
Yeah, your old computer, what, is 4-core, maybe 8?
Yeah.
And the new ones are 16, maybe 20?
Well, and that's just it. My current machine is 8 cores. No.
Four core, two threads?
Four cores, 8 threads. The new one will be 8 cores, 16 threads.
Yep.
So there's a 100% increase there.
Yeah, double your...
Right. And then it's a faster clock speed. It's a Ryzen chip instead of an Intel chip.
Faster memory,
et cetera, et cetera.
Faster graphics card.
We've kind of peaked about 4 gigahertz. They're not much faster than 4 gigahertz anymore.
Yeah, but my current one is 2 gigahertz. No, my current one is 3 gigahertz.
Yeah.
This one will be 4 gigahertz. There's a 20%, 25% increase.
Every little bit that you total up adds to the experience.
Chip design has gotten to be...
Plateaued
because of the quantum effects.
Right.
The traces are so small that electrons are jumping between wires instead of staying in their current wire. We're running into light speed propagation delays because it has to go so far to the... So, you know, current modern processor chip has the equivalent of, 30, 40 million transistors? Some ridiculous number of transistors. And trying to get everything to communicate within itself, they just can't make it go any faster. That's why they're adding more cores. So it's like the cylinders in the engine. A 2-cylinder engine goes a lot slower than an 8-cylinder engine. And if you add more cylinders, you can get more power to pull heavier loads.
Right. And we were talking about that a couple of weeks ago, cores versus threads.
Yeah.
The more cores you have, the more things you can do at once. Because each core is essentially its own little CPU.
Yep.
Threads inside a CPU is how many things you can do inside that CPU. So if you have 8 cores and 16 threads, you can essentially do 16 things fairly simultaneously.
Each core can do 2 things at a time.
Right.
No matter how fast your computer is, it spends 99% of its time waiting for you to do something.
Right, so now it's going to spend 99.99999% of its time waiting.
3 billion cycles per second, you do everything, you do something once every 10 seconds.
Right, exactly.
You just wasted 30 billion cycles.
All right, we're going to take... that's the end of this hour. It's an hour of the show is in the books, but there's a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. We will be taking your calls at that number. We will be reading some news. We will be making stuff up. And we will be talking to you. We're live on YouTube right now. And where else?
Just
YouTube right now. And through StreamYard. But we'll see you in just a couple of minutes. Don't go too far. Take a bio break, but come on back.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And joining us in that hurdle, you had something you wanted to say?
Well, no, so everyone in the YouTube chat is talking about Dave's gloves.
Very exciting. Dave's got fingerless gloves so he can do his pickpocketing easier. And joining us in that hurdle is Bill from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Bill?
Hi, Nick, and guys, it's good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. How you been?
Good. Just moving on, continuing to move on. I'm going to get right to my question. I am trying to move things out of Evernote, everything I have in Evernote, for obvious reasons. The big changes that they went through last year.
Yep.
Is there a fast way to do that?
What are you moving them to?
Any other storage medium. Right now I'm moving them into a storage place on my computer, into a file in a folder.
So it looks like Evernote will export as Enix, whatever that is, or HTML. The big trick is once you decide on a new program, what formats can it import?
Right.
Okay. So if I'm just putting it in files and folders, each one in files and folders, is there a fast way to do that?
Not an easy way to do that, no.
But you can export your entire database with the export command.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
Right. Well, again, it depends on what you export into. So, for example, there is a free program called Joplin, which a lot of people have moved to as an alternative to Evernote. And it, I believe, has an import function. There's also NixNote, which is also NixNote, not mine. NixNote 2, actually.
Most any new note-taking program would know how to import from the other programs to ease your transition into using it.
Right.
Yeah, sounds good.
So the first thing to do, and there's, you know, Tusk and a couple of others, so the best thing to do is to find an alternative you like and then import into that.
Yeah. At this point, I mean, you know me, Nick.
Yeah.
I don't know if the other guys remember me or not. Dave would remember me from motorcycling, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I do.
But I would, at this point, just rather put them into a 1 terabyte drive and be done with it, you know?
Yeah, well, again, you can export them as HTML and then open them up in your web browser.
Okay.
That's probably...
Yeah, probably the best.
And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't hurt to export them in both formats and keep the other one around in case you decide to try one of the other note-taking apps. I mean, it's not all you're using is a little extra disk space.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I don't mind. I've got plenty of storage.
Right. Even if you throw, you know, download it, you find it's 30 gig, buy yourself a 32 gig thumb drive and stick it on a shelf somewhere.
It's so cheap, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple of terabyte drives sitting here that I can use, so.
There you go.
Should handle this fairly easily. I just got into this Evernote rut. Yeah. Maybe a lot of people have gotten out of by now this time, and I just bit the bullet and spent the money for an extra year, and now I'm at the end of my year and saying, I better transfer all this stuff.
You're right.
So, an enviable place to be.
Right.
And I hope to see you, Nick, at the next Rochester Rules.
Yep, I hope you're there.
We'll give it a try.
Absolutely. That'll be January. First yep. Thursday in January.
And it's at the Olympia?
Sorry?
It's at the Olympia?
Yeah, that's at the Olympia. They've always been at the Olympia restaurant, but there's a Facebook group.
And well, the Olympia restaurant has moved a couple times.
Right. It's on Long Path.
Lyle
Avenue.
Lyle now, yep.
And it was an L word. It's Lyle Avenue.
Yeah, trying to make connections back again. Like I said, it's been a while.
Perfect. Okay. We'll be glad to see you.
Thanks, guys. I'll be glad to see you, too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that goes for anybody who's interested in Google stuff. We meet the first Thursday of every month at the Olympia restaurant, and we enjoy a meal and good conversation. Nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
Nothing wrong with that. All right. And while you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415, I will read another news item. On Wednesday, a U.S. government security official urged Americans to use encrypted messaging as major telecom companies struggle to evict Chinese hackers from their networks. The attack has been attributed to a Chinese hacking group called Salt Typhoon. There have been reports since early October that Chinese government hackers penetrated the networks of telecoms and may have gained access to systems used for court-authorized wiretaps of communications networks. Impacted telcos reportedly include Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and Lumen, also known as CenturyLink. T-Mobile has said its own network wasn't hacked, but that it severed a connection that it had to a different provider whose network was hacked. Lumen has said it has no evidence the customer data on its network were accessed. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, the NSA, the FBI, and international partners urged telecommunications providers to upgrade their security and published a guide with recommended practices. Officials also spoke to the media, saying it isn't clear when telecom providers will be able to close their networks to the hackers. CISA's advice for Americans, use encryption. Our suggestion, what we have told folks internally, is not new here. Encryption is your friend, whether it's on texting messages or if you have the capacity to use encrypted voice communication, even if the adversary is able to intercept the data, if it is encrypted, it will make it impossible. And I didn't say impossible to do what, I'm assuming he meant to decrypt it. An unnamed FBI official, which many of them are, was quoted as saying that phone users would benefit from considering using a cell phone that automatically receives timely operating system updates, responsibly managed encryption, and phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication for email account, social media, and collaboration tools. Despite recognizing the security benefits of encryption, U.S. officials have for many years sought backdoors that would give the government access to encrypted communications.
When encrypt everything except for us.
Right.
That's not how encryption works.
Right. Supporters of end-to-end encryption have pointed out that backdoors can also be used by criminal hackers in other nation states, which is what's happening now.
Yep.
So use a program like WhatsApp, which is encrypted end-to-end for messages, calls, photos, videos, and other media, or use an RCS-enabled text messaging program like Google Messages and, I believe now, iMessage.
One of the tricks with Google's RCS is you have to turn encryption on manually. It's off by default.
Right. So how secure are your communications? Give us a call and talk about it openly on the radio. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
Yeah, they're all quick to say, let's stop Chinese hackers. But in the next breath, it's, but let the American hackers in. Because
right.
We have to get into your stuff.
Well, now they're even saying, you know, don't even let us in. Because it's just, Chinese hackers are in our networks. The call is coming from inside the network. So if you use end-to-end encryption, which you can set on pretty much every single device you have, I have a friend in the Philippines, and the only app she uses is WhatsApp because it is the only app that is fully encrypted end-to-end, no matter whether you're doing voice or video or pictures or whatever you're sending to anybody anywhere, it's end-to-end encrypted. Done.
A couple of the apps you have to be a little wary of, they do... end-to-end encryption for one-on-one calls, but as soon as you have a group, it doesn't encrypt it.
Right. But WhatsApp does. WhatsApp is fully encrypted end-to-end for everything. And a lot more people are using WhatsApp as their major phone and messaging client.
Right.
Whatever you use, and again, I get it. Who are you? You're nobody. You don't have anything anybody wants. Yeah, you do. The more information they get about you, the more likely it is that they will be able to impersonate you online.
Or at least use your device to break into other people.
Right. But, you know, if you've been talking to a friend about, I just got a divorce and this and that, they can go online and pretend to be you and say, yeah, I'm just divorced and this and that. They know all these things about you because they were able to get them from your conversations. I've talked about this before. There used to be a program called VOMIT, Voice Over Misconfigured Internet Protocol, where you had unencrypted internet voicemail, voice calls. And you could sit. I did this. I didn't realize what I was going to be getting at the time. But I was teaching a class in security, so I went into one of the common areas at RIT, and I set up VOMIT, and I recorded for about an hour, and then I took it back to my office to pick out some conversations to talk about in my security class, and I realized I could not talk to my students about any of them because there wasn't a single clean conversation that I, as a faculty member, could feel comfortable talking to students about.
Yep. We used to do the same thing with radio scanners. Listen to CB radio all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's basically the same idea, and it's a thing. You have to be aware that people can. And in the case of Chinese hackers, will be listening in. And it doesn't matter who you are or how unimportant you think you are. This stuff is automated. Bots don't care. Yep.
And
bots are going to record everything.
What's the story? The NSA is recording everything into their multi-exabyte hard drive farm in Utah. So eventually computers will be strong enough to break today's encryption. So today's computers can break 20-year-old encryption.
Right.
And eventually computers will be strong enough to break today's encryption. So they're keeping it around just until computers are ready.
Right.
But most of the encryption services have already started putting in quantum safe protocols that theoretically...
Well, what we think are
quantum. Right. We think they're quantum safe because no one has really done a quantum computer one. Well, no, I did read they can now factor a 7-bit number. So what is that? 0 to 64?
Yeah, 64,000.
Yeah.
Something. 16 billion? Wait. I don't know. I'll have to figure it out.
No, yeah, 7-bit is 128, 8-bit is 256.
Right.
Yeah. So today's encryption is using 4096-bit.
Right.
So we've got a couple of decades to go before that's a problem.
Right. All right, back to the phones. It's Bill from Greece back again. What's up, Bill?
Yeah, I had a little problem with what you guys told me.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Yeah. You said that what I should do is go into the system and click star to create a favorites list?
Well, it depends on where you are. If you're actually talking about being in the contacts or whether you're talking about being in a message.
Well, I just switched to Google Messages because you guys says that that's where everybody's going.
Yeah.
And I did what you said about, because I couldn't create a favorites list. So I did what you said, and I went in and I clicked the thing that said star. So now I've got five favorites. Unfortunately, under each one, it says talking with, and then it's got 5 minutes. Talking with, 35 minutes. Talking with, 38 minutes. Talking with, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
That, well, is that mean there's a conversation, something being sent that's been sent for six minutes ago? What's going on?
Well, what that means is that's how long you have talked to that person on that phone. That information never leaves the phone.
But I haven't talked to them. This is a messaging service, and I haven't sent them any messages. All I wanted was a favorites list.
Where are you seeing this? In contacts or in?
In Google Messages. When I click the Google Messages, it comes up with your list of all your people.
Yeah.
And what it comes with now that I've got these things starred.
Oh, that's 32 minutes ago. That's in the right-hand column.
But it says texting with. It doesn't say texted 37 minutes ago. It says texting with.
Yeah.
Because you were texting with that person 37 minutes ago.
But I wasn't texting with them. All I did was star it so I could have a favorites list.
Yeah, but you still...
You didn't do that 37... You might have done that 37 minutes ago.
Yeah, you made
That's an interaction. What they really mean is you had an interaction with them.
Yeah, you made them on their favorites list.
You made it. You had an interaction with them 37 minutes ago. It's not correct verbiage, but it is correct data.
It's technically correct, the best kind of correct.
Kind of correct. it's technically incorrect. You didn't text with them, but you did have an interaction with that system.
I'm not comfortable with this. I think it's going to be using data on me. Is there a way to...
No, that's all entirely on your machine.
It's remembering everything you've done in those messages.
This says texting with as if it's an ongoing action.
It is.
Is there a way...
Every time you text that person, it remembers them.
All right, let's stop. Everybody stop. Everybody stop. Everybody stop. Everybody stop. We're all talking at cross purposes here. What Bill is seeing is incorrect verbiage. What he's seeing is that 32 minutes ago, he had an interaction with the system for that person.
Exactly.
It may have been a text. It may have been a voice call. It may have been just saying, I want to star that person. But there was an interaction 32 minutes ago.
Yep.
That's not the same as you definitely texted that person 32 minutes ago.
Is there a way to remove these people?
You can unstar them, but now that's another transaction.
And how do I do that?
The same way you starred them, you go in and unstar them.
There's not an option to unstar. There's only an option to star when I go into it.
Hit star again, and maybe we'll unstar them.
I tried that. It added
or delete them?
There's not a delete option. Yeah, I'm worried if I delete that I'm going to delete them from my contacts and I'll lose their phone number.
Well, yeah, that's what you're telling it to do.
Right.
That's
I don't
what
want to delete. I just don't want them starred.
Okay, I believe you do that in contacts. So I can go into contacts and there's in the upper right, there is a star, and it is currently filled in, which means that person is starred. If I click on it again, that person becomes
unstarred.
That star becomes open, blank in the middle, and they are no longer starred.
And you do that in the Contacts app.
Right.
Yeah, I just opened the Contacts app, and I have a list of favorites. I don't have any star.
Yeah, right next to the word favorites is a star.
Yeah.
That is the same thing, favorites and star. Inconsistent terminology, you got to get past that. So if you were to click on one of those people and open up their contact, so you see their picture and their name and all that stuff, in the upper right corner is the little gear icon. Right next to that is a star.
Yep.
And if that star is filled in, they are starred. They are a favorite. If you tap it again, they stop being starred. They stop being a favorite.
Okay, I just did that. I reopened Google Messages, and they are still there.
They'll still be on the list. They won't be a favorite.
Because you haven't deleted the message.
I didn't have a message. I did was try to star them to create a favorites list.
Right, and now you went back to the Messages app. The messages are still there because you never deleted them.
Right. So,
but are you saying the stars are still there?
Well, you guys told me to create a favorites list, and I did that. And when I open Messages, this list comes up. I want those names.
I don't know what you're seeing in the favorites list because I don't see. I have lots of favorites, and I don't see them as a choice.
Well.
In Messages. I see them in Contacts. I see the favorites list. But I don't see the favorites list in Messages.
I've got the messaging app. When I click on the Google messaging app,
yep.
There's a whole list of people that I starred. I went into the Google Contacts app, and I did find the stars. And I took all the I clicked on the stars so they weren't filled in. I went back to Messages, and I still all these people, and it says I'm talking with these people.
Yes, that's entirely a separate thing. You had some sort of interaction with those people X number of minutes ago.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did, because you starred them and then you unstarred them.
That's an interaction.
Why are they still there in Messages? Why does it still say I'm texting with this person?
Because you haven't deleted the message.
As long as
I didn't create a message.
You,
yes,
you're
you
saying
did.
That there's no message there for those people.
Right.
And so when you click on them, when you click on them, you don't see a message to them.
Right.
But you did star them and then unstar them, and that's an interaction. Yes, it says messaging, and I have told you that that is an incorrect terminology.
It's ready for to do a message.
It's not a message. It's an interaction. And you did have an interaction with them when you unstarred them.
Well, your phone, yeah, you had an interaction on your phone. It did not, well, it... It did not send them any notice that you starred or unstarred them.
It didn't use your data. It didn't use anything. It just had an interaction on the phone itself.
Right. I just wanted. I'm still uncomfortable with this, and I just wanted to know: is there a way I can get these people not to show up when I go into Messages?
Delete the conversation from Messages.
Right. So if you open up the message. Let me make sure I'm telling you the right thing now. If you open up a message and go to the three stars, you can hit delete.
Three dots?
Three dots. Three dots. You can hit delete, and that message will go away.
Okay.
And then they're removed from the messaging app.
Okay, that gets rid of them.
Until you make a new message to that person.
Right, and then the next time you send a message to that person, they will show up on that list again.
Yep, thank you.
Okie doke. All right, I'm not going to put all that in the thing. I'm just going to say Ray Messages. All right. The terminology can be confusing, and I do understand that. But you have to understand. You have to be a little more flexible than Google is, and understand that the terminology is
just the way they word it. It's just
But
they're probably assuming you starred them, so you're probably going to want to make a conversation with them. So it started a conversation with an empty box for you to type in.
Right, you starred them, so it thinks, okay, these are important. I'm going to stick them at the top of the list.
Yeah,
and it's an interaction with your phone as far as making a list and everything else. It's not going out over the airwaves. It's just your preferences. That you want them in that list and on that particular list, like you said, at a higher point, so you don't have to go searching for these folks because you use them all the time. That's right. Why they have the favorites list.
Right. And that's one of the things that I actually like about messages. The newest messages are at the top. So as I have the people with whom I have the most common interactions seem to be, generally speaking, at the top of the list. And that's kind of nice. I appreciate that.
We have people come in for service, and they have dozens of unread messages on their phone. And how can you ignore a message?
I can ignore it for a while. I don't have to answer it right away, but I will answer it.
It's kind of we joke about older people who are used to not answering the phone. Let the phone ring. Because you had one phone in the house and you weren't near it. Well, I'll get it later.
Right.
I have unread. Now, unread email, 400,000 unread emails is the record I've seen on someone's computer.
Oh, that's not bad. It's not the record I've seen, but that's not bad.
They never delete any junk mail.
That's one thing I disagreed with one of my friends, because she'd sit there and say, well, you know, a text was coming. Well, you should answer that. No, I am busy with you folks. That's being rude, and they can wait.
Yeah. I can be rude to you, or I can be rude to them.
Right.
Well, would you rather be rude to them?
You know, the point is, the phone is for my convenience.
Yeah.
Not for theirs. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. All right. Bill had a list and checked it twice, and you should do the same because we're coming up on the holidays. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. See you in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
Right.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 585-966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And while you do that, I will read yet one more news item. With the end date for Windows 10 less than a year away, people still using that operating system will need to start preparing to enter the Windows 11 era, or just simply be out there commando style on the internet.
Well, some folks are going to have to do that because Windows 11, at least on the one machine I got, says, sorry, this thing does not meet the specs for Windows 11.
Well, exactly. Microsoft is placing a hardware requirement on the current OS that could pose a problem for those of us using older machines. Windows 11 will require computers to have TPM 2.0, also known as a Trusted Platform Module. This is a dedicated chip or firmware used for device security, and the 2.0 version offers several useful features for improved cryptography and encryption. A blog post from Microsoft outlines all of the benefits and why it's being made a core part of Windows 11 installations. Notably, the latest TPM can help future-proof the three-year-old operating system by helping to protect sensitive information as more AI capabilities come to physical cloud and server infrastructure. All that's well and good, but many older machines don't have TPM 2.0. That version became the hardware standard for Windows computers in 2016. Savvy users may have been able to use Windows 11 on incompatible computers with workarounds, but Microsoft language that TPM 2.0 is not just a recommendation, it's a necessity, indicates that the company will likely be getting more stringent about preventing those bypasses. You can check the TPM status of your computer with Microsoft's PC Health Check app ahead of the October 14, 2025 end of support date for Windows 10. And yes, you can buy an add-in card with a TPM 2.0 chip, but first you have to make sure your motherboard even has a TPM 2.0 header. Then you need to see if it has a 14-pin or 20-pin connector, and then there are other potential compatibility problems with add-in modules from a different manufacturer than the one who made the motherboard. In all, Microsoft is pushing people toward new computers next year, or Linux. Which way will you go? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. Yeah, it's... Linux, we're seeing a lot horizon. More. I get a lot more people calling me and asking, you know, tell me about Linux. How can I test it out? How can I play with it? And I get it. People are sick and tired of Windows and the nonsense that Microsoft, the hoops that Microsoft is making people jump through. I get it. And one friend of mine just had could not wrap his head around the fact that it was all free. Linux was all free. I said you can pay for a support contract if you want to, but Linux itself is free. Every program, every module, every piece of it. Well, what if I want something from a different Linux? Yes, it 99% sure you can install it on your Linux. So yeah, it's all good.
So wonderful. Where's the profit generated? There is no profit. We just want people to be free.
Well, so then
my corporate mates get rich, right? No, nobody gets rich.
It's
free.
There's really two paths. There's two reasons people write Linux stuff. One is just ego boo, right? It boosts their ego to be seen as a person who helped. And the other is you can buy support for your basic Ubuntu type distributions from Canonical or your basic Red Hat type distributions from Red Hat. For example, RHEL, the Red Hat Enterprise Linux. You pay for that, but you're not paying really for the operating system. You're paying for the support and service that you get from Red Hat for that version. And they make enough money that the free version, it's still viable for them to send that out. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Philip from Rochester, New York. What's up, Philip?
Hello. I need a new computer or computers. I'm currently working with a 15-year-old Mac, and I can't believe it still works. And it doesn't work that well. I'd like a desktop and probably two laptops or something along those lines. I do a lot of... image upgrade imports for my postcard business, but I at present I'm not keeping most of those images. I like having a desktop for that, but the laptops we want to be able to use in other rooms and not be tied to the office. I know you often recommend the Google. Google Book.
Chromebook,
yeah. My only question with that is does Google own all your documents and scan them and that sort of thing?
Well, they say no.
Okay.
They say no. That's as far as I can go with that. If you're looking at Macs, if you're currently using specialized Macintosh software, then you you're strictly doing everything through the cloud now.
Not doing everything through the cloud, but it's the scanner is the scanner software is compatible with either.
Okay, so the first thing you need to do is figure out what programs you use and whether they'll run on a Chromebook. Almost everything that runs on a Chromebook either runs through the cloud or you use the Linux subsystem to do that. If your programs run on a Mac or on Windows, then you need a Mac or a Windows machine to run them. Like I said earlier, Chromebook for anybody who spends 99% of their time in their web browser, it's the ideal platform. but for someone who uses a bespoke program in Mac OS or Windows, really needs to buy a Mac or a Windows machine?
Not really custom software. We use Microsoft Office, but obviously we wouldn't have to pay for that if we were using the Google Docs.
And right. You don't have to pay for it on Windows or Mac either. You can use alternative programs instead
of paying. Right, you can use LibreOffice instead. But so the thing to do before you go buying something is spend a little time trying it out, because the Google Docs is free, and you can use it through whatever web browser you have right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you can create your documents with your image import and everything else using the web and see whether or not that works for you. If it does, a Chromebook is an excellent alternative for you. If not, then you will have to go with either a new Mac or a Windows machine.
And if you're using a physical scanner, it would likely have to have a web interface to interact
well,
with Google
Docs.
Well, you
can connect it right through USB if it has USB.
And then, when you're trying Google Chrome to see if a Chromebook works for you.
Right.
But on a Chromebook, you'd have to have a scanner driver for Chrome OS.
Right.
Or Linux.
Pretty much everything. It uses cups.
Yeah.
So pretty much everything is available. But again, yes, you would have to do a little bit of due diligence to make sure that all your devices will work with a Chromebook and all of your processes will work with a Chromebook.
Now, if I wanted a laptop, I mean, excuse me, a desktop, how compatible does it have to be with the Chromebooks?
Well, okay, so a couple of things. You can use any desktop and just use the Chrome browser.
Yeah.
Right? Or you can buy a Chrome box, which is essentially a Chromebook in a little case, in a little puck-looking thing, and you attach a regular keyboard and mouse and monitor to it. And it essentially is a desktop.
And the new M4 Mac Mini for $599 is a screaming fast computer now.
Right.
What if I got a PC built? Would you recommend a PC built by a local shop?
Yes.
Yes, I would recommend, if you're going to go PC, I would recommend you get a machine built by a local shop. If you're going to go with Apple, there are local shops also that sell Apple equipment and are authorized Apple dealers.
That way, if you've got problems, whether it's a PC or a Mac, by buying locally, you've got a face and a person to talk to if you're having issues with it.
Right. And while Steve is not allowed to say, I think I can say, MacAv is a store.
Yep.
I think I'm allowed to say that. Maybe not. I apologize if I've done something bad. But, yeah, so the idea is that you can find, if you're looking for a Mac, and as Steve said, the Mac Mini is not terribly expensive and just ludicrously fast. Again, it's another hockey puck. You attach any keyboard, mouse, and monitor to it, and you have a full desktop computer. And the same thing with a Chrome box. But if you are currently using Macs and you have software that was designed for Macs, sticking with Mac might be your best option.
We have iPhones, but I don't know that they're dependent on. I mean, we back them up to the Macintosh, but I could do that with a PC, couldn't I?
You could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've been incredibly helpful.
Well, good. Good luck.
Thank you. Oh, and I'm a supporting member.
That's what we like to hear. Thank you. Thank you, Philip. Appreciate it.
One of the interesting things that Apple likes to point out is cost of ownership versus purchase price. That you can often get a PC cheaper, but not an equivalent PC, when you look at the performance that the Mac chips are giving you. And as this show demonstrates, people fight with their PCs all the time.
Yeah.
And so you're not doing your work. Where the Mac doesn't have as many problems, and oftentimes when it does, you can fix them yourself. So the in general, the Macs cost less in the long run to own and use.
Right. And while I am a Linux advocate, I am agnostic about what you buy, because I'm not here to sell you anything. So if you are already in the Mac ecosystem, and you have iPhones and a Mac and et cetera, sticking with the Mac ecosystem is probably a good idea. And as Steve has pointed out, for less than $600, you get a ludicrously fast Linux desktop. Now, yes, you do still have to get a keyboard and a mouse and a monitor. You probably already have those because you've already got some sort of desktop that's running fine right now. And, you know, a monitor is going to last until a monitor dies. So
the other thing
that's been the big trade-off with the iMac, the all-in-one
right.
Mac computer and monitor in one box. If you need a better computer, you can't use the monitor because it's not a monitor, it's a computer.
Right.
But if you get the monitor and computer separately, it's easy to replace one or the other. When one part wears out, you get a better other part.
So I can't, if you get the all-in-one, I can't plug a different computer into that monitor?
No, you can use screen sharing. But it's a computer. It doesn't have a monitor input.
Right, right, right.
And the other thing that he should consider, though, is where is he going to get his help from? You know, if he's got questions in that about different software and this type of stuff, and he goes Mac or PC, and most of his folks are using the opposite.
Right.
The support, that's the other thing, consideration.
Right, and that's the thing I tell people first, generally, is you know, if you've got an ecosystem, and not it's not just hardware and software, but it's the support, right? If it's the people you rely on when you've got a problem, if those are Mac people, get a Mac. Find the nearest 12-year-old and ask them what they use. But yeah, it's again, I'm you know, I think the Mac hardware is quite exceptional, if you're doing, you know, in Philip's case, he thinks he doesn't do a lot of actual manipulation of images, but I bet he does.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then a super fast machine for very little price, like the M4 Mini, would be a good purchase. Again, it is entirely, you know, up to you what you get, but that would strike me, particularly since, again, you're already using Macs, you've got iPhones, et cetera, et cetera. But keeping in the Mac ecosystem, and particularly for the low price of a Mac Mini, is a good idea. It makes sense to me. You know, I'm a Linux guy all day long, and I will put Linux on any machine I buy.
And we're cousins because I'm running BSD Unix.
You're in a BSD Unix.
I'm the grandfather.
right. And I if I wanted to, I could, well, the problem I have with Macs is it's hard to replace the GUI.
Yeah.
So I can't use the GUI that I want to use, and that just annoys me as an iconoclastic Mac guy. But all the rest of it, installing software of whatever ilk I want and fooling around in the kernel and doing all that stuff, I can do that if I want to. And so that's kind of nice. But, you know, I'm a Linux guy, although I suppose I could put... I don't know if there's an M4 version of Linux. I would have to look that up.
Probably.
If not...
I remember the old
power. At least in beta, if nowhere else.
I remember the old PowerPC days. They were pushing
huge on Linux. But, you know, so I can put Linux on dang near any machine.
Linus Torvald said he bought a Mac to port Linux over. I don't know how far it's gotten yet.
Right. So, you know, I could put Linux on anything. So in my case, the real question is what's the best hardware for me to use for the price point? And the things that keep me away from a Mac Mini is I can't add additional hard drives and a couple of other reasons. But generally speaking, it's a very nice product.
Not internal.
Right.
The expansion is all external.
Right.
And a lot of PCs are starting to come like that, too, the mini towers. Traditionally, people buy these giant tower boxes because there's a lot of bays to add 16 hard drives, and you never do.
Right.
So they've gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. I've seen some PCs now that they're basically a laptop motherboard inside the case, and they have an external power supply, like the laptop bricks are.
Yep.
And it's just a giant case because that's what you're used to buying.
Right. Well, in my case, I'm looking to buy a new computer, and I have three 2.25-inch SSDs that I want to put in it. That precludes a lot of form factors.
Right. Or you get an external chassis and make them external.
Except then they're slow.
Still bet you need. But not on Thunderbolt 5.
Not on Thunderbolt 5. That's true. That's true. If I did buy a Mac Mini, I could use Thunderbolt 5, and it would be pretty quick.
But Thunderbolt drives are about twice as expensive as a USB drive.
Well, exactly.
You can have faster, you can have cheap. You can't get both.
Right. But yeah, and in terms of backup and everything else, USB is just fine.
Yep.
But in terms of daily use, you want something a little faster. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Scott from Webster, New York. What's up, Scott?
Hey guys, in regards to upgrading PCs to avoid any potential price increase, do you have a recommendation or have you got it on your website in terms of the components within the PC that you would recommend?
No, and that's because it's so individual. I'm putting together my own machine now. I've been using some research previously done by Steve Organic, so it was nice of him to share that with me. But again, everybody's going to be a little different. Which motherboard do you want? How much RAM do you want? Which drives do you want?
And what you're going to do with it.
And what you're going to do with it.
Do you need a lot of CPU power or a lot of GPU power?
Right. So it becomes a very individual thing, and that's why we suggest you go to a local dealer and have a face to look at. You can buy a generic machine online, but you're going to get generic performance.
And the first thing, when you go into that store, the correct question they should ask you is, what are you going to do with the machine? Right. Not that, oh, hey, I've got this box and this box and this box. Which one would you like?
Yeah.
They need to sit down and say, what are you going to do with it? No sense of buying a Cadillac when a mid-sized car is going to do you. Not that I'm saying that you should, you know, slack off any extra oomph that you might want on it. That's good.
And that's your choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, buy for the future, not for the present.
Right. Yeah.
Bump up. Intel's kind of gone out of flavor because of their issues. Should I stay away from motherboards by Intel, or is that
right
up to
now,
the provider?
Right now, in general, the AMD Ryzen series of chips, R-Y-Z-E-N series of chips, seems to be preferable to the Intel series of chips.
Okay.
But it's not by a whole lot. Okay, they're a little bit more powerful and a little bit cheaper.
What was the other brand besides AMD?
No, AMD is Ryzen.
Oh, I'm sorry, R-I-S-E-N or something?
R-Y-Z-E-N.
Okay, AMD Ryzen. Okay.
Right, AMD has the Ryzen 7, the Ryzen 9, et cetera, et cetera.
And
right?
Then Intel's got their Core.
Core i7, yeah. i-Core.
3579, the bigger the number, the better it is.
Right.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it. Long-time listener, supporter, you name it.
Thank you, Scott. We
appreciate
it.
And a lot of times, even in the name brand PCs, there's different tiers. So there's a cheaper tier that might be using, what are we on now, the 10th gen Intel.
And 17th, 14th.
Right. And so the expensive tier might be using the 14th gen Intel.
Right.
So it's still, so that's one of the tricky things. It still says i5, but if it's the 14th gen, it's much faster than the 10th gen.
Right. So there's, it's not an easy, everybody has so many choices.
Yeah, I don't understand why a computer company would make 100 slightly different models.
Right.
Well, because you can fit everyone you want in there. But that's got to be torture on their manufacturing line and their production line and their salespeople. And
well, and so I was talking to somebody
with 20 different Macs.
What really makes me angry is I don't want a black case anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I want a case with color. And they said, well, the problem is if you give two people too many choices, don't talk to me about too many choices when it comes to computers.
Yep.
There's already 240 different processors, and that's only one component.
Remember when all the computers were beige and then black was the crazy color?
Yeah, exactly. Now it's all black. And the problem is, my problem is all the little labels are black on black.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too old for black on black.
But then they hit... Then they had the water cool ones. Remember that you could get, they were the
you
black
can still
case.
Get those.
Yep.
And I mean the lighting inside, and you see all the water flowing around.
Well, yeah, and now you can get the RGB fans that change color, or you can set a color.
Yeah, that's one thing on the Mac. The iMac line comes in 7 different colors.
Right.
The MacBook, I think MacBook Air has got 4 colors, and the MacBook Pro has 2 colors.
Right. But yeah, there's a lot of pretty amazing stuff out there, but some of your choices are more limited than others. But again, you know, I'm just a curmudgeon when it comes to that stuff.
And many times with a small computer, you plug it into your big screen TV and you're sitting in your recliner with your massager running on it.
Right. You're not paying attention to what the box is anyway. So why not have it black so you can hide it in a corner? All right. That's it. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I really want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. Really interesting set of discussions. We appreciate that very much. Please vote in the poll. We've only got 56 votes so far. And this is an easy one this week. So all you folks who download the podcast during the week, and it's fixed, by the way, the podcast is working, so you can download that. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?